This is OTB AM.
So you sat, investigator. If someone said that you were taking L-carnitine injections, are they not telling the truth?
Definitely not telling the truth, 100%. I've never taken L-carnitine injections at all.
A few days before the race, with Alberto present and your doctor and Barry Fudge, and you're telling us all about that now, but you didn't remember any of this when I kept asking you about it 5 minutes ago.
It all comes back to me. But at the time, I didn't remember. At the time, 10 minutes ago. At the time, 10 minutes ago, I didn't remember.
OTB AM, Ireland's only sports breakfast show. Weekdays from 7:30 AM, only on OTB Sports Radio. Live 24/7 on the Go Loud app.
Now, you're welcome, Max. So, we discussed Congress a little bit in the news round there. We're going to turn to it again now with Cliona O'Connor, who's in studio. Played in goals for the Dublin Footballers from 2002 through to 2015.
Yep.
Which is a hell of a stint. Twice an All-Star, All-Ireland winner in 2010. And now working with Matty Kenny and the Dublin Hurlers in the backroom team.
Correct.
So you're perfectly placed to talk about the two things we want to talk about, the hurling sin bin and football back pass to the goalkeeper. Did you, as a matter of interest, know this was a motion in advance? I had heard very little talk about this.
I didn't, actually. Yeah, I didn't know till the weekend, until I saw the things coming through online about it. So it wasn't a big, you know, in comparison, let's say, the mark and all that sort of stuff, that was a much bigger deal for everybody. Mm. But I don't know with the rule itself how much of an impact it's generally going to have when you kind of think about it rationally. So, I mean, from a goalkeeper's point of view, it's cutting out maybe a very easy kick out. So if you're kicking it to a cornerback or a fullback, somebody who's close to goal and they are kind of, their momentum is with them, they're coming back towards the keeper, and the easy thing is a hand pass back and then there's another pass on. So just by taking out the fact that they can pass back to the keeper, it's just up to other defenders then to be that role, you know. So that just, it just makes the defender's job a little bit more complicated. They have a little bit more to think about, but you can still give it back to the keeper in open play, so they can still be as involved in open play. So I'm not sure how much of a challenge, generally speaking, it's going to be. You know, people think it's going to absolutely change the game. I'm not sure if it will.
Yeah, probably not seismic or fundamental, but maybe significant. If, you know, 9 weeks out from the championship, if teams have worked on routines, maybe,
then
I guess it's interesting. Because Malachy Clerken had a very good piece today, and it's interesting even just to see how these things are passed. So, 9:34 p.m. on Friday night, this was proposed by a club in Kildare, 9:34 p.m. Friday night, the only speaker was the one in favour, the proposer.
Yeah.
Nobody even asked a question.
Yeah.
And then by 9:36, 2 minutes later, with the bar beckoning outside and the hustle and bustle outside, passed, done.
Yeah.
And it's coming into effect in 9 weeks' time. And you look at, you know, he was drawing the comparison with hurling and all the talk for weeks on end about, God, the black card, the sin bin, which actually won't change tactics or preparation at all.
Yeah.
It's amazing that a big change like that somehow funnels its way through in football for 9 weeks' time in the championship.
Yeah, well, maybe there's a couple of issues. There's the issue that our football, are we used to more changes and tinkering with the rules in football? So that's one. So it's not a big of an issue. There haven't been as these big debates around hurling. So we are more used to around football.
There's the sense football is broken of late.
Yeah, there's definitely a general sense of that. Well, there's people who would argue, but that's been the narrative, I suppose, for the last while. And then I think the other point of view is what they're trying to do with the game. They're trying to encourage more forward momentum, more 50-50 balls, more contesting, bring back that element rather than the game management, the back passing, the playing it around, all that. So I think people who want to, you can see the rationale behind the rule in terms of encouraging that sort of play.
Yeah.
So people maybe are more open to, well, this is just another rule to encourage that type of football, which we all want to see.
I wonder, is it, you know, not a backward step, but you think of the good old days of put the ball down, get your biggest football boots on, boot the thing as far as you can.
Yeah.
You know, 50-50, so that's what it's about, that's what we want to see. It seems like a step backwards to me, like almost every sport. We're watching Premier League football all the time, football generally, soccer generally. Like, possession is king. And I always thought it was quite an impressive thing that GAA was moving that way, even hurling, picking out passes.
Mm.
So now to, you know, you use that phrase, where they're trying to move the game towards.
Mm.
It is interesting that, you know, there's this real kind of, maybe it's a nostalgic thing, this desire to get back to more contested balls. Maybe that is better for the game, I don't know.
Yeah, well, I think it's definitely there is a bit of nostalgia. We do love, like, think about when you're in Croke Park in the middle of a championship game and somebody leaps up in the middle of the field and catches a high ball, and sure, everyone thinks he's God's gift. You know what I mean? And it's one, and it's a great spectacle.
And the mark for that has worked brilliantly.
Yeah, yeah. Sure. So we've encouraged that, and that's positive. But I also think from a goalkeeper's perspective, when I think about it, I think some of the hardest kick outs sometimes are the short ones. Mm. And they're, in some ways, they're the riskier ones. Okay, you can orchestrate it so there's a man in space, but if it goes wrong, it's right up at your own goal, you know. And again, think about from a spectator point of view, when a defender sneaks in and steals it off a cornerback and runs for goal, that's incredibly exciting. Mm. But also from an accuracy of the pass, from the goalkeeper's point of view, if you're trying to hit a cornerback who someone's pushed up on them and they're right over on the sideline, there's not a huge amount of room for error. Or if you're trying to hit someone who's coming straight at you down the middle of the field and you've got attackers either side of them, you kind of have to have nerves of steel in that respect.
Mm. And I enjoyed watching that cat and mouse game. I hope that doesn't go. I mean, one of the argument against that, and Malik Clerkin had it in his piece, was they looked at Galway playing Mayo in the qualifiers in July. And apparently Bernard Power had the most outfield possessions of anyone on his team, and David Clark in the Mayo goal also handled the ball more than any Galway outfield player. Mm. And this obviously excludes kickouts. This is just having the ball.
See, there you go. So this rule deals with kickouts.
Yeah.
But what Malachy described in that piece actually is open play.
So it won't change that overly.
It won't change that at all. And that's where that that interest or that new swing towards the game management thing, and we do see it in soccer, playing the ball back and trying to be very particular and planned in how you attack and when you go and when you sit back and all of that. I think that's the piece, and that's the mentality that's bringing in the how would you call it, the defensive football, or the holding onto the ball a little bit. It's that attitude that's driving that sort of game, and as Malachy outlined in those games. So it's actually not the kick out, but this was I suppose the easiest way to try and limit the amount of passes to the goalkeeper. But I don't think in general play it's going to make any difference.
No.
Well, it won't make any difference in general play at all.
No, I presume it will be very easy still to work a routine or work a triangle whereby goalkeeper to cornerback, get it to another player, and then goalkeeper's back in play.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's actually maybe not going to change the trend overly.
Yeah.
But with 9 weeks' notice, teams are now going, jeez.
Yeah, I mean that is potentially an issue, but I don't think, as you say, with a triangle, I think it's quite easily solved. To be honest, I don't think there's a major, like, I wouldn't be that worried if I was coaching a football team now that I couldn't overcome this
pretty quickly.
Yeah, I don't think so at all.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Well, there we go. So that's what's happened in football. Meanwhile, in hurling, obviously you're involved with the Dublin Hurlers, so you'd have an eye on this as well. David Hassan of the Playing Rules Committee stood up in front of Congress and he said, look, we've analysed 20 high-profile, top-calibre hurling matches between 2017 and 19, and we have found that 48% of fouls involved cynical or disruptive conduct. So effectively, 48% of fouls. I think the word he used was cynical was used, and then professional foul. Now, I'm not sure what the difference is between cynical and professional. So 48%. And he said, the presence of cynical fouling in hurling is well accepted. Knowing that and consciously deciding to do nothing is contradictory. What sort of games do we want? And the reaction was overwhelming. 82% said, no chance. Go away. The Antrim chair stood up and said, the black card in hurling is as welcome in Antrim as Joe Brawley on the Sunday game. And brought the house down. Congress, you! And some of them banged their hurls on the table. So hurling just doesn't want to know about this. Leave us as we are. This was the message in the build-up all the way along. What were you hearing in the game? I'm sure it was a talking point.
Yeah, to be honest, generally speaking, there seemed to be a unanimous agreement that, we're fine, we're grand. And maybe it is in comparison to football, because there has been so many changes in football that the hurling community, like, they love their game, and they love the fact, the heritage of the game, and I know there was reference to the UNESCO, a cultural game of heritage or something that was given that status, let's say, a while ago.
Yeah.
So all of that story around hurling means that people don't want to touch it. Just leave it alone. And I suppose that rawness to it is part of the attraction and part of what people like about it. And I think any sort of changes to the rules there would want to be a lot that nothing is going to sneak in hurling, I don't think, under the table or not even under, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Nothing is going to sneak in the short term if ever there will be any changes.
Yeah, because one of the arguments they made as well was we can't bring this in 9 weeks' time.
Yeah.
Now, the football lads, you'll do what you're told.
Maybe
it'll need a Sean Kavanagh-esque moment.
Maybe. And sometimes that does happen with a rule change, something that is it becomes a kind of a turning point or a flashpoint for something like this. I would say, like with a black card or something like that, that has a bigger impact on a game than I think the football pass back rule would have.
Yes.
In 9 weeks' time. So I think it would definitely be unfair. There would definitely have to be trial periods and that if you were doing any changes like that.
Do you see cynical fouling in an average game of hurling routinely?
That's one of those things about where's the line and what's cynical, and you can argue both sides of it all the time. The nature of hurling, it's very combative, and what I do see is like there is a lot more coaching going into the tackle and the technique around the tackle, and I think referees are going after those sort of things a lot more, and rightly so, and they're trying to kind of draw clear lines around those sort of things, and I think everybody agrees with that in terms of high tackles and just there is a little bit of control needed around that, which everybody's in favour for.
Mm.
To be honest, I think the cynical fouling, professional fouling, I don't see it in any more than you would in any other sport, in even ladies football or camogie.
I have to be honest, it hasn't jumped out at me massively. I mean,
no,
you see the odd one, but yeah. I didn't think it was crying out for it, because you remember football for a couple of years, the body check was ruining games and ruining overlaps. Whereas in hurling, certainly 50, 60 metres from goal, that's a costly free to give away because it's popped over the bar.
Yeah, and that's the other difference with hurling. You don't want to give away any frees, probably within your own half. There's players who are putting the ball over the bar from their own 65, what I mean? So giving away a free in hurling is really, really costly now. So I wouldn't see that it's massive in the game currently. I wouldn't see it's an epidemic. Now, the statistician may disagree with me, but it's not something I've been aware of anyway.
Well, to be fair, he used a percentage there. So 48% of fouls involve cynical or disruptive conduct. That doesn't say how many fouls there were in a game. Now, we've had a spate in recent weeks for whatever reason. Have you noticed that?
I haven't, to be honest, no. Okay. Yeah. That's true. You don't see, is that 48% of 10?
Exactly.
Is it 48% of 6? Who knows? And who exactly is deciding what a cynical or professional foul is? So there's a bit of semantics.
I don't know
in
what
that.
The difference is.
Yeah, not too sure. Yeah.
You're obviously involved with the Dublin Hurlers at the moment. The league, I've seen a few pieces, and I must say the thought has occurred to me as well in recent times where for I don't know how many years the Hurling League was just phenomenal, because Division 1A had the best teams in the country effectively, and someone was getting relegated and it was going to be a big team. And then Division 1B, there were generally three very good teams pushing very hard for two spots. And so what they've done this year is mix things up. So you've got the likes of Laois and Carlow and Westmeath and all these teams in with the bigger teams. It's a more even spread of the bigger teams. And the sense is almost that sense of jeopardy is gone a little bit. And, there were six games at the weekend. You could argue four of them were not foregone conclusions, but lacked that who's going to win element which you need in sport. Is that a talking point in the game? Is that something that you feel has or hasn't worked?
Well, to be honest, it's not a talking point that I've really been aware of. And I think, what's the motivation? It's to develop the game. It's to give more, let's say, up-and-coming counties a chance to play against better teams. Mm. And the first time they do that, Are they going to beat them by 10 points? No, they're not. They've got to measure themselves. And then you've got feedback, and then you say, right, well, we're this far off where we need to be if we want to be in that top group. And that takes time. You don't
You don't start playing the top tier in hurling and then all of a sudden you're able to match them. You have to weather the storm a little bit. So I think I don't think there's been anything that's been across the league that there's been too much, the score differences have been too big that you think this is a disaster.
Yeah.
But I think over time you need to let the disparity in the standards, that you need to let everyone try and come together a little bit more, which in the long run is going to make for better championships and better competitions. And the league is the place to do that.
Yes, yeah. It's probably true. I mean, the short term, obviously, you want a better league and blah, blah, blah. All the rest of it is an obvious enough instinct. But if hurling is serious about becoming more than just 8, 9, 10 counties.
Yeah. You need to let the more counties play against the top teams. They're never going to get up to that level unless they play up there. Mm. And I think probably in the leagues and championships the last couple of years, like, hurling has been outstanding in yes. terms of from a spectator's point of view. So now if it ever falls short of that, well, oh God, what's happening? Have we messed around with it too much? But I mean, the weather's been brutal over the league as well, and hurling is always better played in better weather, you know.
Different sport. You must see players who are looking around at this mud now and they're saying, this is, you know, don't worry about me, I'll be fine come summertime. Not interested.
Absolutely not. Players would never have that attitude about mud and muck. I know what it's like, but I mean, everyone's trying to keep their pitches in as good enough condition as possible. But it absolutely does affect the game. You know, the slitter getting stuck in the ground and trying to rise the ball on the run and all that. So, we live in Ireland and that's just it. We've got to get on with it.
How demanding is the league? I ask because Peter Keane was on yesterday. He was talking to Mór Trasna Cailleag after the game in Castlebar, and you know, the reality of it was just kind of hitting home, where he was saying, you know, we have 3 home games, 4 away games, travelling from Kerry, long distances.
Yeah, I heard that, yeah.
And it's like week on week on week. And he was glad the game yesterday went ahead, because next week is a rare off week for the players. And even just recovery, back into work on Monday, not overburdening them in training Tuesday, Thursday. Even the notion that you have time to work on all these magical tactics and stuff.
Yeah.
The way he talked about the league, it was like, we're just trying to get through it a little bit almost.
Well, you're also talking to the Kerry manager, who they've got big distances, so it's definitely going to be an issue for them, or you're in Donegal or wherever.
Yeah.
So it can just be luck of where you're situated in the country for sure.
You have Clare, Wexford, Kilkenny, Laois, Carlow. That's not so bad, travel-wise.
Not so bad. But I think, like, even the week turnarounds, I mean, that's what you're going to face in championships, so you've got to steel yourself to that. And some people say, oh, it's too much demands, but you go to other sports and they compete day after day, or they could, soccer, you'll have two games in a week sometimes, you know. So we just have to adjust our training and our preparation to that, you know. And you know that if you play on a Saturday and you play the following Saturday, you're not going to get a huge amount of physical work done in between those two games.
You just can't.
Yeah. Like, there's a recovery side of things.
Somebody, before we wrap up, what happens if the cornerback takes the kick out to the goalie and then takes a return pass? Apparently that is allowed. That's a loophole which was dreamt up, I would say, by 9:38 after this
yes,
thing was passed.
Yes, yeah. And I would say, if you're coaching a team and that's your answer to this, then there's a serious problem.
Okay, yeah. You're bankrupt of real ideas.
Yes.
And then, again, this is, you know, this is the lot of football. Sean O'Wexford, the back pass to the goalie is no big deal, but what's really needed is a rule to stop passing back across the halfway line once the attacking team has crossed the line, as in basketball. I mean, people just, these seismic changes being thrown out. I think football's in a great place the last couple of years.
Yeah, I don't think it's too bad. And if you think about, like, what is allowing this short kick out to the cornerback, let's say, it's the opposition team dropping off. You know, if, without changing any rule about the kick out, if the opposition team pushed up and went full press, then that wouldn't be as easy. I don't think the problem is the rules of the game, even if there is, I'm not sure there even is a problem, but I think it's just a tactical mentality.
Yeah.
You know, it's let them have the ball there and then we'll set ourselves up and try and take it off them somewhere else.
Yeah.
You know?
Listen, thanks so much for popping in. So, Cliona O'Connor, obviously all-star and played in goals for Dublin, now working with the Dublin Hurlers. Appreciate it. Thanks, Cliona.
Thanks, Joe.
The GAA Podcast on OTB Sports Radio, Ireland's first and only sports radio station.